Back in October, I was sitting in my office when the phone rang. I picked up the phone and it was command post to notify me that one of my airmen was found dead earlier that morning while he was on leave. In that moment, I felt like my world was falling apart and took a second to understand, as the security forces commander, how I was going to notify my unit. During the 2 to 3 months after I was notified of the death, I started to fall into a really dark place. The death of my airmen brought out a lot of different traumas that I've been pushing down over the years and feared facing due to the fear of losing my career, being med boarded, or losing my AFSC. I am Teresa Gathers. I am a captain, a commander, and a defender. Beneath this uniform is me. I am a warrior of life.
Welcome to Your Story Doesn't End Here, the mental health podcast of military and veterans who refuse to be silenced. I'm your host, Rachel, and my mission with this podcast is to be a voice for those who don't have a voice, bring awareness to mental health issues, provide value and solutions, and to change the culture when it comes to mental health within the DoD organizations. Hey everyone, thank you so much for coming back for another episode of Your Story Doesn't End Here. Today we have guest Teresa. Teresa is retired and served in the military as both officer and enlisted with over 16 years of leadership experience in group of up to 400 personnel. She has held positions requiring her to make intricate decisions while serving in combat roles, nuclear security, law enforcement duties, air-based defense. She served as a security forces commander as the last position she held in the military. She has effected change in the Department of Defense policies, Air Force level policy, and procedures for sexual assault, human trafficking, and gang activity. She has also effected changes in Air Force policy surrounding mental health treatment and modernization. Teresa is currently an International Coaching Federation Associate Certified Coach and Certified Dare to Lead Facilitator, one of approximately 500 trained by Brené Brown herself. She is the CEO, Athena Unchained Coaching and Consulting LLC, and specializes in transformational coaching and leadership consultation. And just a side note, before you listen to this episode, make sure you go check out the clip. It's a video about 5 minutes long of her story leading up to this episode, and we're going to pass it off from there. Teresa, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thank you. So that video can be found on YouTube. It's My Mental Health Journey. And then you just search Teresa Gathers and it should pop up. And that just gives a really good preface for what I'm ready to discuss today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will make sure to post that in the show notes for anyone that just wants that easy click directly to it. But I'm going to pass it off to you to share your story. And I'm really excited to hear what you have to say today.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to share the second chapter of my mental health journey and being active in my own mental well-being, and just concepts of holistic wellness is really what I've been leaning into, especially as of late. So in that video, it kind of covers about 2 months of a snapshot of my mental health journey after I lost one of my members. It kind of just shot something through my body and let loose all the trauma I've experienced in my life. And it was at that point that I decided that I needed to do something a lot more and start living for myself. And how I was going to even start down that road was facing some of the trauma that I've been through, both as a child and in the military. So I returned to my unit. I was a commander at the time. My unit was super supportive the entire time I was in treatment, and both times that I attended, focusing on traumas from losses, my military sexual trauma, and then also combat-related trauma and child abuse. So after having a lot of self-discovery, I came back to be a commander, and it was about a month where I felt my mental health it started to regress, and it scared me. I was still actively seeing my psychologist from that program and also a therapist at the same time. And I engaged with both of them and kind of explained, like, I don't like what I'm starting to feel again. And we talked about how me being put back into the environment where I was affected by a lot of the trauma that I've experienced was only going to trigger me further, right? Me specifically and what I've been through, because being a commander and constantly having situations that trigger you was just not the healthiest for me at that point. So I made one of the hardest decisions in my life, and that was to ask for a military mental health board. I felt confident that I could still work on my mental health in order to maintain, but it was really, really hard for me to sit with the fact that I would no longer be able to continue and to serve. I had a lot of mixed feelings about that. During that time, when I came forward and talked about going through a mental health board, I stood in front of my unit while I sat down amongst them, and I explained to them that I know that I would try to be there for 3 years, and we are only hitting the 2-year mark, but I know that they love and respect me, and this is what I have to do to save myself moving forward, because we all have a choice to stay in an environment or not, and choose to continue to serve. So I decided at that point that I was going to move forward with this. We all cried together. People told me really awesome things about how I've affected their life. And I made sure they all understood no matter what, I was always there for them. Like when I say we're family and I mean it, especially with what we had experienced through my command. I feel like as a commander in 2 years, I probably experienced things that commanders experience over like 3 or 4 commands. It was super intense, but honestly, one of the most beneficial opportunities of my life. So I started with the med board process. I had a couple mentors that felt the need to say to me that I was being selfish, and that me choosing to take a mental health board, I was not putting the airman first. And they asked me to my face, who's more important, me or the airman? And I said, me. That is the first time I'm saying that. Like, I am the most important right now to myself, and I need to lean in on me. Because anyone that's a fan of the Enneagram, I'm a 2, which can be very detrimental. You know, I'm constantly helping and putting myself out there for other people. So that was a lot of disappointment that came out of those conversations. I didn't really have the support that I thought I would for taking care of myself, mentally and physically at that point as well. And it was interesting, because at that point in time, I had served 16 years in the military, and it was like that service didn't mean anything because I now decided to leave. And it made me think about the stigma, not only around mental health, but moving forward and making the decision for yourself that, yes, you went through these mental health treatments, but this just isn't for you anymore. Like that's hard to swallow. And I think I was even more proud of myself for standing up and not continuing to push myself and in the long run, possibly hurt me or the people I lead, you know. And I want to set the example and get people to understand, like, the military is not everything. As much as they make us believe that we can't survive without it, I can tell you that's a load of shit, right? And I really want people to see that they have a lot more potential, and the military does not represent them. It's just a part of their journey. And the experiences that we get from that journey are some that are not comparable in any other environment, which I'm truly appreciative of. So the following month comes along, it's June, and it had become a lot harder for me to be a commander because I felt like I was being targeted for taking a stand and making sure things were going correctly. There are times where I was told that I was too intense and things were not that serious when it comes to air-based defense and security, which was, I think, triggering for me in a way, because I mean, I'm sure if people sitting at the Pentagon heard that, they would not be happy about those comments. So me being the Defense Force commander and being the advisor to the base commander, I would say, look, like, these are our situations, and this is a risk you're assuming without even assuming the risk. You're just not signing off on anything, right? So I got called into his office one day, and he told me that he wanted me to put my cops in front of a resource without any weapons at a civilian location So I informed the wing commander that I would not be putting my members in jeopardy. And the next day I decided to step down from command, and it was not due to my mental health. It was me recognizing that I could no longer stand as a commander and follow orders that to me were not legal. And with me filing an IG complaint that went to the Pentagon for investigation, I felt like them not interviewing the other commanders and taking as seriously as I thought they would left me with no protection to continue to stand up and do what I know is right and legal and moral and ethical. So it was at that point, I'm like a month into the med board and I'm getting mixed conversations of, you know, we're going to expedite this. You'll be done by October. This is a mental health concern. It's serious. My psychologist and my therapist both wrote letters talking about my decline in my mental health and strongly urging for an expedition of this process, and pretty much that I would need leave at times to take care of my mental health. So shortly after, I found out that there was leadership amongst the wing that was telling people in my unit that I was not I did not remove myself from command, but they suspended me due to my mental health, and that there would be a possibility of me coming back if I got better. So I wrote a very formal letter to my boss, who was going around telling people that, and the base commander, and asked them again to remove me, officially remove me from command, because I know what a suspension means. And that's very confusing for people. And I'm not ever coming back. If this mental health board does not go through, I'm resigning my commission. I will not be a part of this anymore. I wrote it very professionally. But so that letter went forward. And I also asked for them not to discuss why I stepped down from command. If people wanted to know, I would openly share that with them. But it also was not okay for them to basically be making up something different because of what the truth was. So I sat my unit down and I told my entire unit that I was stepping down because I was asked to put them in harm's way, which I will never do. And I will not stand behind. Again, very supportive. They were upset, they cried. But I think more than anything, they were proud of me for standing up and doing what I stood in front of them and said I would do the first conversation I ever had with them. And that was the minute I can no longer be a commander for you is the time that I step down and I will no longer be a commander. Right. So moving on, I was pretty much given a no contact order because my unit needed to move on and they couldn't do that if I was around. So at that time, my unit was my family, right? So that was just cut for me. And I really struggled with support. I had a couple civilian friends that really came through and they were a huge support for me. But what we experienced together and the level of emotional grit that we grew within my unit with trust, vulnerability, courage, and conversation was a relationship and feeling I have not had prior, right? And I know without a doubt, I would do anything for them. And I would say, I'm not going to say all, you know, because you always have your haters, but majority of them would do the same for me. So I lost that support system. That was July of last year. So then fast forward, my med board, I kept just there, it didn't seem like it was moving anywhere. And it really started to affect me a lot more. And I thought I was having a lot more PTSD triggers. And it was interesting because a couple of months ago, I realized what I was suffering through during my med board was moral injury. And it was like a newer term. I know that sense when it comes to combat and how people are affected by moral injury in combat. And I know the intel community in any branch really is affected by moral injury. And so I hear that term when it comes to combat, and I'm like, one of my mentors mentioned it. So I started like researching it, and I was like, oh my God, like this right now is not PTSD. This is moral injury, you know? And the moral injury that I faced was the true belief and value of taking care of people. And once I got out of that intensive treatment program I did, I think blinders were taken off of me and I could see through everyone's bullshit. Right. And I had a lot of people that helped me along the way, but there are people that really failed me. And I feel a true sense of abandonment when I even think back to what has happened to me over the past year. So I'm still actively seeing my psychologist, my therapist at the time. I started to become really depressed because I felt like I had no purpose. Like they tried to put me in EO for the wing, but I'm still attached to a wing that I felt like was targeting me. I filed a IG complaint against the prior base commander, and I just stepped down because a base commander had asked me to do something illegal, you know? So I really started to struggle with my worth. And I feel like what all that work I put in with myself was starting to unravel, and I was starting to like lose grasp of it. And the one analogy that I actually used with a lot of my leadership was, I feel like a recovering drug addict that was put in a crack house. And over time, it felt like people were like trying to sell me the amount of drugs that could cause an overdose. And I kept pushing back and pushing back. And I just felt like there were so many times where I was so close to just leaning in to like get rid of all the pain, you know? And I will say from September 2022 until April 2023, I thought about suicide every single day. And I feel like my self-awareness and the work that I did helped me actively work through that. And when I would make comments in my head, when they would pop up, I would kind of like coach myself. I don't know if that's a healthy thing to do, but I would kind of like coach myself to kind of understand where those emotions were coming from. And I would ask like, why do you want to do that? Like, what would that change? Who would be affected? And I never really had a fear of consciously killing myself. I think my fear was unconsciously killing myself, like having a mental break or a psychotic break. And unfortunately, that's how I've lost a lot of people to suicide. So that's like the fear that was lingering over time. And it even got to the point where I had told someone supervising me that I felt like I was getting close to suicide, or I had been thinking about it. And they said, I don't believe you would ever do that because you have a bigger purpose and God loves you. You have people that love you. And like in that moment, like I didn't hear anything but him challenging me, you know? And I'm like, again, triggered moral injury. Like I just poured my heart out to you. And I mean, I had texts, like paragraph texts to this, colonel. And to hear a response like that, it hurt. And it made me feel like they weren't taking what I was going through very seriously. So I was moved up to headquarters ACC to work with them and do like leadership development training and stuff throughout my med board to have a purpose. So I got the opportunity to travel around to a lot of intel bases or intel squadrons and train Brene Brown's program, Dare to Lead. And that, I mean, I truly feel like that's something that kept me alive. I think a lot of times we look at people and what they have, and that's why we can't see why they're hurting so much. I think it kept me busy. And I think it also gave me hope that, you know, I am here for a bigger reason. So moving along that, there were several things that occurred during that time. My command was put under investigation. And I was notified of that 3 days before Christmas. I had people contact me from my unit and crying, telling me that they were coming after me. So that was hard for me because from what I had seen, to me, it felt like reprisal. Like I just stepped down from command. And then, you know, this investigation, people are well aware of that I did from the Pentagon, like coming back down with zero results or it being dismissed. So I was struggling a lot mentally. I had started to drink again because I felt like I could handle it and I could not. I made bad decisions when I was drinking, but nothing that ever hurt anyone, right? And one of my mentors, when I explained to him and the shame that showed up with me, that I decided to get blackout drunk and just like do stupid stuff that is not me. He told me that we've all been there, and anyone that drinks on a regular basis and says that they haven't and they can't relate to it, that they're just, you know, pretty much feeding me a line of bullshit. And the first thing I needed to do was like forgive myself for that. So I started drinking again, which was a bad decision because not only had I been diagnosed with substance abuse issues, I also knew I had zero control over it. As much as I wanted to have control over it, I just don't. It's not something for me to partake in. So that was hard too, you know, being in the military. You don't want people to not drink around you because I'm not affected by other people drinking. It doesn't make me want to drink. I think it's more the decision of when I drink it, like me not wanting the moments to end because I feel like the sense of euphoria is something I have never experienced before as an adult. So after treatment that first time and being sober, I actually unlocked the ability to feel positive emotions for the first time in my life. And it's something I mentioned in that video. And it was pretty crazy because I never understood when people would cry with like happy moments. Now I watch like America's Got Talent and I'm like tears streaming down my face the entire time. And I know it's not sadness. You know, I'm proud for the people that are showing up on there and getting new opportunities and showing off their talent. So that's a really cool thing to experience as an adult. I'm sure I experienced as a child at some point. So there's pictures to prove it. I don't remember it. Yeah. So the whole concept of positive emotions, I also saw them wear off when I started to regress. And also when, I started drinking every once in a while. So last October, I got notified that my sister was found dead, and she actually had died from the same exact thing that my member died from a year prior. And her death was a day before his 1 year anniversary. So, I compartmentalized that because I had other things going on in my life. And then I wanted to be able to do a memorial for the member I lost. I was doing a reenlistment and then we were doing a memorial service for him. And I wanted to be able to show up and give him the attention that he deserved. I don't have any children, but I can only imagine what his parents were feeling because I felt like my heart was ripped out. Like I feel like I reacted the same way as if it was my child. And I think it's because how serious I took my job in leadership and how important each person is to me. No matter the good or bad days, you know, like I love them and would do anything for them. So I had that occur. I didn't really have good support around that. It felt like my prior leadership when I moved up to be on orders in Virginia, that was them like wiping their hands clean of me. I never got any type of briefing when I was put under investigation. Like, there's a whole requirement for that. I was never even notified I was under investigation. And then when the unit was asked about it, they said I wasn't under investigation. My command was, like, my history of my command. So just interesting. So not only did I feel like I did not have proper support, and what I want to say on record is I understand people reach out to me, but I also know what it takes to check boxes, considering I was a commander and what that looks like. So people only reaching out to me after my sister dies, or I have something traumatic happen, or I end up in the hospital, like, that's not enough, right? And I think everything I experienced over the past year, on my mental health journey, specifically while going through a med board, was to be a voice for people that have also experienced that. That way I don't have to talk on the account of someone else. I can talk on my own experience. So I truly believe that now, having made it through. So December rolls around. I was told I was under investigation. I was also told then that my med board was going to take even longer. There were points where there was not clear communication. People were not on the same page with what was going on with my med board. And honestly, I'm really sick of people telling me that's just how the process works. That's not a fucking good answer. That's someone's life you're messing with. And I can only, like, I have done so much work on myself, and I almost did not make it. Through and through, my sisters can attest, I almost did not make it. And to sit back and hear senior leadership at all levels tell me that's just how the process is, it's no different than when your pay gets messed up. Like, I think I'm over hearing about that, because there are people, humans that work in those positions that can be held accountable. And I watched how they aren't, and people's lives are affected. Like, this isn't something minute that doesn't matter, that you can kind of skim over and be like, oh man, they messed it up, they'll get better. No, like this is, these are things that can lead someone down a path to really feeling like no one gives a shit about them, and them asking themselves, like, what the hell they're doing. Like, what is the point of them continuing to live, you know? So speaking of pay, since I switched up to Virginia, I had done everything more than 30 days in advance, because I know the system. So I always take initiative and do it a lot earlier than I need to. Send everything to finance and ask them, like, if I'm good to go. I was reassured I had completed everything I needed to do. January comes around, I don't get paid. I ended up not getting paid until mid-February. And that's a lot of money. And during that time, someone close to me got into an extremely horrible car accident in my vehicle that me, along with all the first responders, were confused on how they walked away from it, let alone had zero scratches or anything on them. And that's important, because this is when I was not getting paid. So when I tried to go get a new vehicle, they could not give me one without a pay stub. So I reached back, not pushing the issue before because I have a savings, and realized that's not okay, because there's some people that do not, right? So I reached back out to a colonel and let him know what the situation was, say, like, I do not have a vehicle right now. It was my vehicle that was totaled. Like, I need this. And I just kept being told, sorry, you can't get one until you get paid, and you're not getting paid for another week. And finally, I just said, can someone do something more than what is just normally the baseline of what is asked of them? Can someone put into a letter that it is not my fault, this is my pay, this is when I'm getting paid, and sign it like you're a colonel? Like, what? Like, I'm really, it's hard for me to understand how that's not a thought when it comes to taking care of someone, especially someone that is going through a mental health med board. We are now at December. So my battery life is pretty much at 20%, if that, when it comes to my mental health. And me being open about that, and then every single time, the expectation of me having to figure out everything going wrong. So he gets me the letter that gets resolved. And shortly after that, I get hospitalized. I was on vacation. I started to get sick. I was throwing up. It started off very intermittently, like every hour, starting at 9 a.m. And then around 1 o'clock, it was like every 5 minutes, and then it turned to like nonstop. So I'm not someone that really cares to go to doctors and emergency rooms because of being told to suck it up so much. Like, I really fight my body and I'm trying to do better with that, but still a work in progress. So I was fighting my body, and finally I was like, I need to go to the ER. And it was so bad, I couldn't even walk into the hospital. They had to come and get me in a wheelchair and give me a bag. So they finally get me in there and they do every test possible. They gave me morphine and anti-nausea medication, and my body pushed through it like within an hour and a half. It was gone. And so they had to give me more, but then I had to wait a little bit, right? Because it's not good to get doses, even if it's pushed out of your body, from what they told me. I'm not a medical expert. So I was throwing up so bad that I ended up tearing my esophagus. So I had to be lifelighted to another hospital that had the abilities to do emergency surgery if it was necessary after the other tests they did and observation. Luckily, I did not have to have that emergency surgery, and the tear wasn't large enough, and the medicine finally started working. So they just gave me very strict directions on what I could eat and drink and taking antibiotics. But the ending of that story, part of the story, is the only conclusion anyone could come to was my body was under so much stress, it attacked itself. That was hard to hear because I feel like I'm a pretty healthy person. And I realize that my mental health is not only being attacked, now it's my body as well. Like, my body is, it's like I had different aspects of me fighting. And then at one point, they all started to turn inward, right? Because they felt helpless outwardly. So moving forward, I'm still going through the mental health board. And this is now March, so about 10 months later, of something that I was told was going to be expedited, and I am at probably 10%. And I let my current supervisor know that I need to understand where my package is. I want to resign my commission. I don't give a shit about money benefits at this point. Like, I'm getting to the point where I'm fearing something is going to happen, probably by me, you know? And I was told that's not an option. I already started the process, so I have to stick out the process. And like, the other thing that was really irritating that people kept telling me, I'm so sick of people thinking they know what's best for other people. The money you get from retirement is not shit, especially if you're medically retired, right? And that is money I can make up by doing other things outside of the military that isn't such a strain on my mental health, you know? So for people to want me to gamble my life every single day because of a policy, like, that's another hard thing to recognize and realize, is you have people making decisions for you when they aren't even taking the time to fully understand what you're going through, nor could they probably ever imagine what you're going through. That is a conclusion I have come to, is the ignorance of people not experiencing things to a certain extent and them not even trying to understand. I think it's a lot deeper than empathy. So I go in about, I was told it was going to be another 2 months. And that's when I started to break. Like, I started to give up. I fell into a really deep depression. And then like the next day I got an email saying my whole medical evaluation process has been completed. And I'm like, I was just told yesterday it was going to be 2 more months. Like either someone is just like filling me with whatever comes up to shut me up, which I feel like is the case a lot of times, or people really don't know what the hell that, like, what the hell is going on. And that's absolutely not okay in this situation either. So I then got, probably a week later, I got my retirement date. So 21 May 23. And I was so happy. It was so close. I had 2 months and I would completely be free, right? What I now call Athena Unchained. And I went on vacation. I was on terminal leave and I get back. And I walk into my house and I see mail from my old boss where I was a commander. And at this point in time, I have about a month until I retire. Like I'm officially out. I'm already out processed the military, but I'm done. And I open the letter and it said they concluded the investigation and they listed 7 things that, they were looking at that were pretty much substantiated through their investigation. So that was like a punch to the chest. And I'm like, what is the intent behind this, considering I am a month away, right, from retirement? Like, what is their end game? Because I know when people start investigations, there should always be like, what is your wanted outcome of the situation? So I was just really confused. I'm like, they just can't. Like, stop. They just can't let me go. Right. That's when I completely broke. I went past the mindset of committing suicide. And I decided at that point, I was just going to exist. Like, I'm going to take my car. I'm going to go live in it. And I'm going to exist until I die. That way people can't be mad at me, because I'm not killing myself. And more than likely, I'll probably get back into alcohol. And there's a good possibility that I might go down the path of drugs, but I don't give a shit anymore. So during that time, I had really been failed by someone. And so I felt like 2 senses of betrayal and abandonment at the same time that I think collided and rocked my world. And it made me, in a way, just surrender myself. And I canceled my business launch party. I canceled my coaching classes. I told all my clients, like, I can't be there for you. And it was very interesting who in those moments showed up. And 2 of my sisters actually drove to Virginia, one from Pittsburgh, one from North Carolina, and pulled me out of my office that I was pretty much in for 3 days. Every day thinking about how I got to that low, thinking about my career and everything I should be so proud of. And in that moment, feeling like I just sacrificed 17 years of my life for nothing. Not only sacrificed it, but I have like lifetime scars. Right? Because even if I heal, and when I heal from this moral injury and I heal my PTSD, I'm still going to have those memories that are scars, right? They just won't be as deep. It was a moment where to myself, it just came up and I said, like, I give up, like, I'm over this. I am so sick of people telling me I need to live because of what I can offer the world, and no one cares the pain that I feel and the fact that I want to die every single day. I think it's really selfish when people want you to stay alive in a body with a mind that they don't or can't even begin to imagine the pain that moves through that. That was the biggest moment in my life. Following that, I was able to feel joy for the first time in my life. And I think that joy came with having the realization that the reason why I still walk on this earth, the reason why it's a miracle that I'm still alive with everything that I've been through, is because I am full of divine love, and divine love that I can share with the world and give them space and comfort and understanding. If I know anything about myself, I know that the pain I've felt in my life and the lack of love I've experienced helped me build a house that welcomes every single person, no matter what, so that they have a sense of safety, care, support, and love, especially if they don't have that anywhere else. So my mental health journey, I felt that video was super powerful when I did it. But my journey since then, like, puts that video to shame in many ways. And I don't say that lightly, because by far this past year and the lessons I've learned, the trauma that has hit me, and I still decided to push on amongst all of that, me going through 4 different coaching certifications, building a business, and now becoming certified as an ICF coach, I think proves a lot about me. And it's taken me a long time to stand up and say I'm proud of myself. But for the shit I have been through in my life, I am so fucking proud of myself. And I'm not someone who leaves my career not wanting to continue to help. Everything I do from this point forward is to help give people tools to make them better people and better leaders, because I do believe in affecting change that we want to see in the world. And I know there's a lot of people out there that now I know that I'm not alone with how I feel when it comes to kindness and love, and how I can still be a badass commander and a badass leader in the military in one of the toughest career fields to succeed in. And that doesn't make me soft because I love and take care of people. That makes me a better leader. And the one thing that people will never take away from me throughout my career is I know that I have affected so much positive change in people's lives. And I have put Brené Brown's work to practice every single day I show up. So where she talks about, it's easy for her to do the research, it's hard for her to do her own work, it's not hard for me to do her work, because it represents who I am as a person and a leader. And coming across her was one of the most validating things that ever happened in my life, because I saw someone show up as themselves, not give a shit what people think, and change the concepts of leadership while doing it.
Well, I first want to say that when you talked about the going beyond suicide and just existing, like, that hit me so hard emotionally, because I can relate so much to that. And I think a lot of people can, but no one's talking about it. You know, we talk about the leading up to suicide, we talk about the act of suicide, but how many people, you know, civilians, military veterans, how many people are out here just existing because suicide isn't an option for whatever reason or another. And I've been there, and I think there's a part of me right now that's still, like, teetering in that area. And I think that's why it hit me so hard emotionally, because I'm like, holy shit. Like, it causes me to reflect and, like, start to figure out more things about myself. So I wanted to thank you for bringing that up, because it's so relatable and one of those things that people don't really talk about. There are a few other things that in your story that I really wanted to hit on. One of them being how insane it is how much the military feeds into the mental health crisis. you know, what you started out with was an outcry for help. I just want to do my med board. I'm asking for help. I'm doing all the things that they say for, you know, service members to do, reach out for help. And how much trauma and extra mental health issues, challenges got added onto your plate because you just simply reached out for help. It's just insane to me because we see this all the time. Your story is something that so many people go through where it's like, you know, I just asked for help. I just wanted a day. I wanted a day to gather my shit together. You know, I'm just having a rough time period. Just help me, please. And getting met with toxic leadership and people that don't understand and don't try to understand, which brings me into the next point of people's response to suicidal ideations. And you talked about how there, you know, you poured your heart out to someone and their response was just not what you anticipated. But I think that's the normal response because military members, your average 18-year-old that joins the military is not equipped with the tools to handle a suicide crisis response. But we're expecting these people with no background, no training to handle these crisis situations with people that they're with day to day. And it's not acceptable to just say, oh, well, if I'm not equipped, just send them off to go get help. Well, your story has shown that trying to go get help isn't an option either. So what does that leave? What does that leave anyone with? You know, the coworkers aren't trained properly. They aren't responding properly. And some people, if they are told, oh, you have so much to live for, if they're told, oh, you don't want to kill yourself because of this or that or this or that, that will push them to take their own life. It's happened time after time before. And, you know, some people just want to be heard and just want someone to listen to them. And I think from my perspective, I would say that not everyone wants a response. Not everyone needs a solution. They just want an ear. And I'll let you touch on that too, to, you know, share maybe what you think would have been helpful for you if you know. But the last thing that I wanted to touch on was that checkbox mentality that you talked about, which kind of feeds into what I just said about, you know, the response to suicide. Is there so many people out here that are just checking the box? And I think it's a very selfish attitude to have, because when we see someone that we haven't talked to in years, and they maybe post on social media, or we find out a family member died or they're going through some shit, we feel obligated morally to reach out. But are we reaching out because we actually care? Or are we reaching out because we're checking our own box? And I want everyone that's listening to this to really think hard the next time that you catch yourself, because I think we all do it to an extent, or we all catch ourselves in this to an extent. And it's not to say that if someone's going through something, you know, just be rude and don't say anything. But the bigger picture here is be a human being outside of the crisis moments. Reach out to people, let them know that you care. And if you legitimately don't care and you're not going to be that person, then don't waste someone's time and, you know, be a half-assed friend in their life. I think that just blatantly putting it out there like that, you know, if you're not going to be there, don't waste people's time. But I would love to hear your thoughts on this. What would have been helpful for you as far as a suicide response? If you wanted to just be heard, or if you wanted to hear something specific, but I'll let you touch on what I said. And yeah, go from there.
Yeah. So all good points that you bring back up. And I first want to touch on the piece that suicide training, from what I've experienced, is complete trash. And when you make something so unpalatable for the majority of people, and they walk into the room already with the mindset, oh my God, why do I have to be here? This is the dumbest shit ever. Like, let me, like, you're now just wasting time. Right. And I think annual suicide training is a cop out. I think it's a checking of the box. And I think actually investing in our people and holding value to them as much as we do resources within the military would really go a lot further, and giving them tools, which I think are simple tools of how to communicate, how to have hard conversations, what empathy actually is, and not everyone using it as a buzzword, loving and caring about your people, because I'm sorry to say, but majority of my experience is not what it shows in the movies of, oh, this is a brotherhood, sisterhood type mentality. Like, we have people raping each other in the military. We have people that are out to get each other because they're threatened that they're performing outside of what your abilities are. I'm like, it's, there is so much toxicity that I believe over time will break down with the newer generations coming in. I truly believe that. So we're all the older generations, you know, like to talk about how the military isn't the same as it used to be. Well, I'm fucking glad about that, because that shit needed to change, right? Like, look how messed up people are from even prior to when we serve, right? And I mean that in the most loving way possible. Like, let people have resources, let people show up as individuals, because when it comes down to it, it matters how they form as a team, right? And respecting people, seeing them and letting them show up in full authenticity is what makes a team stronger. So that's that part. My hopes are just for better training, not suicide training, but how to be a damn good person training, I guess, is the way to put it. So what did I want that response to be? I wanted to be seen. Like, I don't feel like I was ever seen by my leadership. I had my member that died, and not once did they ask me if I was okay. Like, it goes back to the checking of the boxes. I don't even think they reacted properly when it came to the death of the individual because of what their focuses are, right? So being seen to me would have been any type of empathetic response. But what was said to me was a pretty hard empathy miss. And I think it was surprising to me because of where I was struggling mentally and where I already was, and just me regressing and being so honest. I, like, probably every 3 weeks, me reaching out and letting him know, like, I'm fading. It's getting worse, you know, and just very political responses. So that one, I think, was a little hard for me because I already didn't feel seen, but even that, it really made me walk through, like, am I supposed to be a martyr? Like, I actually had to have that conversation with myself. Is my legacy that I leave like this? You know, I walked through that, and, you know, I really leaned on different questions internally to be able to work through the fact that that's not a thing. But I think the reason why he responded the way he did is because he does not have tools to respond any differently. And there is part where I have compassion for him as a person, but I don't have compassion for him as a leader. And I don't have compassion for a lot of leaders that just choose not to be better, especially with all the preaching that goes on with taking care of people and people are our number one priority. And just seeing the complete opposite through action is, like, it's really hard. So, I think that, and I think what saved me over this entire time was the work I've put into myself. You know, I believe that emotional grit is stronger than resilience. I hate the word resilience. I actually hate people telling me I'm strong and resilient. I don't ever want to hear those words again. I prefer brilliant, which I've been told recently. funny, cute, I'll take all of those, but the strong and resilient, that can be for someone else. I take pride in my emotional grit, and that's me truly, like, sitting in my emotions and not pushing them down. Like, the way people regulate their emotions, you know, is not healthy. They what I call it is, like, emotional grit is putting your stuff in the refrigerator, whereas, like, unhealthy regulation is putting that shit in the freezer, probably the deep freezer, that you're never going to get the stuff out of the bottom anyways, and it's just going to be trashed, you know? So I think just building on that through therapy, coaching, and my own personal reading and work is what helped me survive, right? And it's now, since I'm past the part of survival and I feel like I'm thriving majority of days, that is something I lean on a lot. Like if I start to feel something, I recognize my emotion, like I go through the whole thing and I really try to take it in and try to understand where it's coming from. Is it a trigger or is it just a feeling that's going to pass, you know, and what do I need to do to move past it? So I think tools like that and people having an understanding of how to do that when things show up, makes a huge difference in how you show up for yourself and other people.
Absolutely. And, you know, you talk about the whole martyr thing and I wonder, just kind of thinking out loud, like how many people that have taken their lives in the military had that same conversation in their head. And it's pretty disrespectful that the military doesn't take proactive change for the number of people that have taken their lives and even veterans, right? Even on the veteran side, like it's extremely disrespectful that resources aren't just being pulled into what can we do to be better. And you're absolutely right when you talk about just better training on how to be better people. I mean, how many people join the military and they don't even know how to bathe themselves every single day? Like basic human things. Some of these people just don't know, because we come from all these different walks of life, and going through an 8-week, 10-week, whatever boot camp isn't going to teach you everything that you need to learn to be a good human being. It's just going to teach you the basics of whatever branch you joined and, you know, whatever the military wants you to know. And so I think the common theme that I hear from a lot of people that have done the work is that they themselves have done the work. They have found something that works for them, whether it be reading books, getting coaching, doing physical activity, something that they have done that works for them. And people are out here having to support themselves. I think a big disconnect for a lot of people is probably where to start and what to do and how to get to that position where they can start to take care of themselves. Because I think at the end of the day, relying on the military, the VA, whatever big government organization to snap their fingers and make everything better. I think that's, I don't want to say it's unrealistic, but I think it takes a lot of time to get to that point, because it truly is a whole culture change that needs to happen. And I think I agree with you. I think we are going to see more of this culture shift as generations start to change within the military and we get rid of that older mindset. I mean, some of these people are still in the military that served 25 years ago. And I mean, so much has changed in that time frame. But a lot of them still carry that old mentality of that old school military and whatever branch they're in. And so what recommendations would you have for someone that wants to start to take that first step to take control and start just being that advocate and being better for themselves?
I think the first step is deciding to make yourself the priority. I think without doing that and dedicating time to yourself, it will not work out. You know, you're pretty much setting yourself up for failure. So make yourself a priority, the priority at the point in time that you're getting started with this. If you're someone that comes from trauma, seek a mental health provider. There are plenty, there's something called Psychology Today. You can go on there and filter and it will show you therapists, their specialties, what insurance they accept. And that's how I got my current therapist. So that's for the therapy side. I will say coaching has changed my life when it comes to forward thinking and forward advancement. I think that was also a very integral part of my journey over the past year, was having coaching to lean on. And this is in the reference of me being coached by a coaching professional. So having a therapist and then also someone that was working on me to dive into my potential and help me believe in myself and build my confidence, I think was an amazing recipe. The other part of that is understanding the relevance of active recovery and medically why that's so important. So building in something that is annually for a week could be a vacation, monthly, a couple days, like a long weekend, 2 to 3 days of doing stuff for yourself, for your family. And then daily, weekly, and intradaily. So this could be anything from float tanks to vacations, unplugging, hiking. What is that thing when you like freeze? Cryo.
Is it cryotherapy or like the ice baths?
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, all of that, right? And then breathing, like my intradaily practice is breathing or meditation throughout the day. And I think just people getting the exposure to that, like when I go around and I train units, I go into active recovery a lot and just healthy coping mechanisms and healthy ways to offload your emotions. And I think a mixture of those and just taking care of yourself physically, one of the hardest adjustments I've had to make is not fighting what my body's telling me. So me going hiking and me feeling I'm thirsty, I have water in my bag, but I fought myself like, suck it up, Teresa. Like that's what was in my head. Like, suck it up, Teresa. And then finally I'm like, what the shit are you doing? Like you have water in your bag. You're not like, you're not hiking in the middle of Afghanistan, right? Like take a sip of your water and move on. And I realized when I was in Costa Rica over 4 days of me hiking, I got down to it only taking me 3 minutes to take a sip of water, where I think it was like an hour that I sucked it up for that first day. So listening to your body, right? That's the last one I would say. There are so many stress-related diseases out there. And I mean, burnout is now listed as a disease. And that's 100% stress and not knowing how to regulate yourself. So I think making yourself a priority, saying that out loud as many times as you have to, leaning into therapy, if that's what you need, coaching for forward thinking and future-based goals, and then taking care of your body and listening to it and focusing on your health, because that's another thing that we are conditioned and institutionalized to believe shows weakness if we lean into it and what it needs. So,
oh yeah, a whole other conversation about the gaslighting when it comes to the physical body from service and medical providers, but those are all fantastic points. And I hope if you're listening, you're taking notes on this, because there's so much valuable information here. And even just picking one of those things and saying, you know, I'm going to start with this today. I'm going to make myself a priority, or start working on making myself a priority, just to put that thought in your head, is extremely powerful, because that's a step in the right direction. One thing I've been focusing on a lot lately is just 1%. Like, how can I take care of myself a little better today than I did yesterday? And it doesn't always have to be, you know, completing a whole program or, you know, implementing 10 things, because that's what I tend to lean towards, is like the all or nothing mentality for me personally. But, you know, just one thing, I think that's important. So Teresa, where can people find you if they want to work with you or just support what you're doing?
So my website is www.athenaunchained.com. Also athenaunchained@gmail.com. And then my phone number, my work phone number, is 804-637-1227. And right now, for the next few weeks, I'm actually running a special to make coaching more accessible, and doing a pay what you can 5-session package. So if anyone's interested, they can just reach out and I can expose you to coaching. I think it's a very misunderstood trade, and there's a lot of people that call them coaches after they like stamp it after they get out of the military, like leadership coach. And I'm like, you weren't even a good leader. Like, why would you put that at the end of your name? Like, you've been through zero training. Just because you led in the military for 20 years does not make you a coach, right? But the purpose of the coaching I do is to just ask very powerful, thought-provoking questions and give people space for self-discovery in order to find their potential, their passions, and to drive them on to the next level. So I focus on peak performance and transformational coaching.
Awesome. Well, I'll make sure to put all the information in the show notes. And I really, really encourage you, if you're listening and you have never tried coaching before, just check it out. At least reach out and ask the questions to see if it's even a good fit. Coaching is absolutely amazing if that person's the right fit and it's the right information and right program. So highly, highly, highly encourage that. But Teresa, I wanted to thank you so much for taking the time just to come and share your story. Stories are so impactful and yours is so incredible. And what you have been through is so relatable, I think, above anything, at least for me personally. So thank you so much for just taking the time to share a little piece of you. The last question I'm going to ask you is if you have any last words or any advice that you want to leave the audience with today.
Yeah, I just want to say that genuinely, we have the privilege to be alive, right? And have a lot of opportunities to affect change. And for the people that are choosing to exist, I just ask you to dig in deep to who you really are and find out what makes you tick and how you can add into making the world a better place. Because I believe the one thing that will change the world is authenticity and people showing up as themselves and really leaning into their strengths, forgetting the concept of weaknesses and really thriving through what they were meant to do and what they were built to do. That moment of discovery is something that is irreplaceable. And what I feel now is something I wish I could share with the entire world, because I feel like it, without a doubt, just authenticity would solve a lot of issues that we're facing.
Thank you for taking the time to listen in today. With your support, we are able to increase awareness of the mental health issues affecting service members and veterans today with the goal of creating positive change. If you got value from this episode, please take 30 seconds to subscribe and share this episode within your own network. Until next time, remember, your story matters, your mental health matters, and your story doesn't end here.